Hello, and welcome to the Legendarium Green Team. I am your host, Stormrunner, and I am joined today by Kiptan.
Heyo.
Befuddled Panda.
Hello.
Spook.
Hello.
And Jingles.
Howdy, howdy.
Today, we will be discussing The Last Command by Timothy Zahn, Book 3 of the Thrawn Trilogy. We will start with a non-spoiler section and then give a spoiler warning before heading into spoiler territory. As with the previous two Thrawn episodes, here are a few things to note before we dig into the book. So this is the third and final book in what is effectively a sequel trilogy to the original Star Wars trilogy. With this in mind, there will be spoilers for Heir to the Empire and Dark Force Rising by Timothy Zahn, the entirety of the original Star Wars trilogy, as well as some minor spoilers for the prequel trilogy. There might also be minor spoilers for the sequel trilogy, but this will mostly be some terminology used to compare the past and present state of Star Wars media. Now, with that preamble finished, what did everyone think of the book?
I quite liked it.
How many times have you read it?
Geez. This is probably at least my 10th time.
Oh my god.
Oof.
Yeah.
I mean, that's saying something that you're reading it 10 times and you still like it.
I used to skip to this one and just reread this one.
Okay.
Which part? Well, all right, yeah, we can't ask that yet, but
yeah. Well, it had so much fun things in it.
It was jam-packed. My first time reading it, I loved it. I had such a great time, and upon Spook's recommendation, I did get the audiobook
awesome.
For this one, and great recommendation. Really enjoyed the performances, and something I really appreciate about the narrator was, like, he wasn't just reading it. He was, like, in the intense parts, you know, he was, like, you can hear the intensity in his voice. He starts, like, really reading really quickly, and that just, like, adds to the ambience. So it was great.
I will always shout out audiobooks for any series, but Star Wars in general is a full-on production, and this was great all the way through.
I mean, you don't generally get John Williams music in your audiobooks.
That's correct. True.
Yeah.
That's
true.
It would make every audiobook better, no matter... No matter the book. Sarah J. Maas with Leia's theme.
Project Hail Mary with the Titanic theme song. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Beautiful.
It's a little, well, fitting.
I haven't listened to their stuff, but is it similar to, like, a graphic audio production?
In a way, but it's only one person. It's just the narrator. So it's a standard audiobook. It just is licensed.
Is it really just one person?
It's just him.
Wow. Yeah.
Really impressive.
Yeah. Some very good effects then for C-3PO.
Exactly. Yeah. He did that all with his mouth. So it's great.
Okay. There
and
are
R2-D2.
Like, there are, I think, audio engineers or whatever.
It's not just him doing all the work, but it's I believe it's just his voice for all of it.
Yeah.
That's really impressive. Yeah. This is my second time reading this book ever. But again, just way long time ago. So not really remembered the beats, but not everything. I think I need to pick up the audiobooks for whatever we do next, though, because that sounds awesome.
Don't you want to hear lightsabers in the lightsaber fight?
I mean, wait, my head has a pretty good audio on its own. Yeah.
Perhaps the most recognizable sound and effect from any movie ever is a lightsaber igniting.
Yeah. But no, overall, I did really like this book. I think I would put it at 2. So Heir to the Empire would be 1. This would be 2.
Oh, interesting.
They're pretty close. I think this book tries to do a little bit too much. It succeeds, but it's for a Star Wars book, it is big. So there's just a lot to keep track of. And yeah.
The thriller roots are very clear here.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, indeed.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I thought it was, this was my second time reading it, but functionally my, for all intents and purposes of this discussion, my first. It's a solid book. It's a solid ending to the trilogy. I do a little bit go back to something I think it was Kipton had said in the first episode we did about having updated expectations for what we expect from sci-fi and fantasy trilogies now. and having that in the back of my mind as I'm reading through the book. But yeah, it's a fun conclusion. Of sorts. for certain plot lines.
It's pretty clean overall.
I feel like the threats that were introduced in this trilogy were dealt with in this trilogy.
Yes. Yeah. 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 It wrapped everything up and left like a little taste for what's coming.
I mean, if you like things to be more gray and like ambiguous, like that's not what you're going to get here. Like it's pretty clean, which I personally really enjoyed.
You're not a Mara Jade fan? Who delights in nuance and complexity, as opposed to her straightforward Skywalker farm boy.
Every time I hear farm boy, I'm thinking the Princess Bride. Yeah, I mean, like, I like complexity, I like nuance, but in smaller doses. I mean, when it comes to an ending, the conclusion, like within the story, within the arc, that's fine.
I will say there's a lot of shallow characterization and characters who are here for like a scene or two and then just not anymore.
Yes, most characters have like one or two things that are their thing.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Okay, there was kind of like a conflict that was hinted that could be in book two that was kind of just ignored for this entire book. So that was one thing I'm like, okay, he's strapped for time. This doesn't really matter, but
yeah. I think I know what conflict you might be thinking of, and if it's the one I'm thinking of, I'm gonna agree. But
also it's kind of weird though, because at the same time I also think there are some middle pieces that I'm conflicted with for this book, where like there's a certain character who kind of goes and tries to establish a bunch of stuff. And then by the end of the book, the way things converge, does what he was doing that entire time necessarily matter? I don't know.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
So it's like a culture book?
Yeah.
I do have thoughts on that.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking about it, but I think I might have a little different take on it.
Yeah. I mean, on one hand, I am actually appreciative of that, because I think there is like a certain level of communication that Zahn is being aware of, and he's making all of these people kind of free agents in the way that they choose to go towards things. It's just, you know, that's 100 pages of information where others could have done with a little bit more. So,
Or just 100 pages that could have been cut.
Really?
Sure.
In this book?
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't.
It's not even 400 pages.
You didn't need all the fights.
It's almost 500. Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
well, copy is less than 400.
For the amount of actual story, I could have used a little bit less of a word count.
Interesting. Okay. All right.
I mean, it's a quick book, and it's not like it's particularly done, so that's fine, but I could have used a little less word count, I think.
But I think the audiobook was like 15 hours or something.
Yeah, but I was listening at 2.25x, which made the music a little interesting to listen to. But like, that was the speed that, you know, I could still understand it, and the speed that my brain was reading it at, so.
I read it at 1x. It was great. And yeah, it's about 16 hours long.
I can't listen to people talk that slowly.
There were also like pauses and like little like music. The worst.
I was at work. Like, I can't.
27.
There were quite a few pauses, like lengthy pauses in between chapters.
What do you mean? Like in the book?
Yeah, in the audiobook. It was like pause.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. In the audiobook, yeah.
Chapter 27.
Yes.
Pause.
Yeah. Well, you have to know when it ends, right?
Yeah, so, I mean, that's why I sped it up, but...
The music really at the end it. Indicating the end wasn't enough.
Shall we get into spoilers?
I think so. Okay, so final warning for all spoiler stuff up to this point. In 3, 2, 1. Okay. Let's do a summary. After his victory in claiming the Katana fleet, Grand Admiral Thrawn continues his campaign to reconquer the galaxy in the name of the Empire. Luke seeks to find Thrawn's cloning facilities in an effort to destroy them, and thus remove a pretty enormous advantage that Thrawn's clone army affords him. Leia finally gives birth to Jaina and Jason Solo. And Leia, Han, and Lando and company and fend off another kidnapping attempt from Thrawn. Meanwhile, Talon Card, who is absolutely not working for the New Republic, gathers various parts of the criminal underworld together to resist Thrawn and the Empire. Thrawn then attacks Coruscant in a quick hit-and-run attack, leaving behind asteroids orbiting Coruscant in a mostly successful attempt to temporarily remove it from the board. During an intellectual slash strategic cat and mouse game with Thrawn, the New Republic attacks the Bilbinji shipyards with some unwitting help from Card's smuggler alliance to gain a gravity machine to help them deal with the asteroid threat that is blockading Coruscant. Meanwhile, Han, Lando, Luke, and Mara attack Wayland in an attempt to destroy Thrawn's cloning facility. After a tense confrontation and battle sequences galore, Luke fights Luke, a clone of himself that Sabaoth had created. Mara Jade kills Luke and Sabaoth. Lando and Han succeed in destroying and company succeed in destroying the cloning facility, and Rook kills Thrawn. Definitely missing stuff there, because a lot of things happen in this book. But there's our big plot points.
Your pronunciation for Luke was a little off. It's actually Luke.
Is this yeah. audio go ahead. How does the audiobook pronounce his
Luke?
Clone?
It's Luke.
Yeah, there's a little bit of length on it.
Yeah. I internally pronounce it Luke.
But there's no fantasy apostrophe.
No.
Luke.
I will say, I did in our messages, I did call that Mara would kill Lauk, and I said, if Mara does not kill Lauk, Zahn is a bad writer.
Yes.
Because it's like, the whole book is about the last command given to Mara by Palpatine of kill Luke, kill Luke, kill Luke. And I'm like, well, it's, if it doesn't end in her killing the clone, it's like, come on. The gun is there. Come on.
Yeah.
You mean you don't think it's about Thrawn's last command to defend the Bilbringi shipyards?
Well, if it was, it didn't really stick.
Or Palin's last command to retreat?
Maybe.
That's right.
Or maybe the last command as in like the last command Thrawn ever had because he died and then not holding it anymore.
Or the last command Luke gives, which is take my lightsaber.
True. There's a lot of things that could be.
However you want to interpret that. Well, I would say like the ending, the big points of the ending with Sabaoth dying, with Thrawn dying, and like Mara Jade not actually killing the real Luke, like, those were not surprising to me. Those were like, okay, I can see where this is going. But I still really enjoyed the process of getting there. And just the overall, like, the whole Card plotline was that was not as expected for me in terms of like how it was gonna get to where it needed to go. So that maybe that's why I found that pretty interesting. And then there weren't that many twists in terms of like things that caught me by surprise, but I still just really enjoyed the ride.
Yeah, the twists are all, or not all, but a lot of the twists, so to speak, are characters doing something they think is smart and will outsmart the other person. And then the next scene is the character they're trying to outsmart realizing exactly what they're about to do and repeat ad infinitum.
It can be a bit convoluted. Like, I admit that.
It's fine. I didn't say it was a bad, it's really a bad thing.
Exactly. Just... like, it still worked for me, you know? The whole part where it's like, you know that scene in Friends where it's like, well, they don't know that
yes.
we know that mm-hmm. they know that whole thing. That basically happened in this book. But I still enjoyed it. It didn't go as ridiculous and as long as the Friends episode.
Well, that's also what the Friends episode is about, and that there's some ridiculous stat about the number of times the word "no" is said in that episode. it's like several hundred. It's like,
oh my god.
Well, thing, but anyways.
Yeah, I think the biggest twist of this whole book, really, because the Dark Force Rising really does just lay out exactly what it's looking for an ending, and I think it gives you all those pieces and you just need to wait for them to kind of fall in place.
Yeah.
The biggest mystery and twist, in my opinion, was the Delta Source. What that actually ends up being, which I appreciate it. I give a little something to kind of look forward to and discover.
That was one of my favorite pieces of like science fiction growing up.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, cool, biochemistry and espionage all together. Love it.
Yeah.
and it's a little bit more interesting than just a person.
Or even a droid.
Definitely more interesting than a droid. Yeah. I completely forgot what Delta Source actually was and that it was winter.
I thought it was winter too.
Like in my mind, that's what I remember. I remember Delta Source being winter for some reason, and that is obviously wildly incorrect.
Well, there's definitely, I mean, if there's any effort on Zahn's part,
memory.
Kind of lead it towards anyone. It is winter. The conversations with Mara and Winter are very suspicious between the both of them. They're both trying to like find out who the other is, and
Some of like Winter's interactions in like the strategy room, and some of that stuff is a little bit fishy with like the timing and like how she like when she appears and when she doesn't, and but the actual Delta Switch reveal is very cool.
Yes, that part was a twist and surprise for me, and I lost my shit when I found out.
I would say one other twist was Luke, or La'uk. But going into the series, I knew he was a character.
Okay.
And I had no idea when he would pop up, so the entire time I thought Luke was replaced by the clone. I'm like, when is this going to get revealed? When is this going to happen? I'm getting excited. And then it's like, oh.
one fight and does almost nothing.
Yeah.
Doesn't even blow up.
Did you think that Luke had like been killed prior to Heir to the Empire?
No. No. I thought or hoped that when Luke was on the planet with Carr, because there's like a part where he just is gone and then he shows up on Coruscant and it's like, what happened here?
Okay.
Okay. So by the end of the book, I'm expecting like a Sam Reich, I've been here the whole time. Oh. No. He's just there for 20 minutes.
Well, it was important for Luke to fight himself, the evil part of him.
And for Mara, here if he can speak.
No, he doesn't seem to have much intelligence.
Well,
or at least
and he's usually
he's a puppet.
Yeah,
literally, yes.
Okay, can we talk about the clones for a little bit?
Yeah.
For some reason, the clone stuff is just not like something that is super interesting to me.
Well, you didn't live through the Clone Wars.
I know.
Well, apparently neither did any of the characters in this trilogy. If continuity is to be believed.
This came out before it.
Yeah,
it's okay.
But what I did appreciate was the use of the clones for like some world building and just like some explanation of the Force and like what an extreme form of like Force use could be like. And like Palaeon was contemplating about, hey, like, why is it that Sabaoth is able to so easily manipulate these forces? Is it because they're clones? And just like planting that seed, and then later on taking that to an extreme where it's like, oh shit, like if he gets like all 20,000 clones and he can continue to reproduce and he has that ability, like what we see with Kovel, then that really would be scary, right? So I did appreciate the evolution of like how the cloning plot went.
Yeah, and how they incorporated the Isal Mari into that was also interesting.
Yeah,
and, like,
we get the explanation.
Keeping away the madness and...
Yeah, and we get an explanation that like in the Star Wars universe, cloning has Force repercussions.
Yeah.
And the Force is an impediment. It's like inherent impediment to Force cloning. But then we also have twins being born.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That was intense for me.
Maybe it's because they are two.
Are you saying identical twins are cursed in this universe, but fraternal twins aren't?
Fraternal twins are just kind of... I don't have a.
So let's talk about the birthing scene.
Natural childbirth versus cloning. Clearly, there's something in this universe that thinks they're different.
Oh, but that is such interesting. Okay, never mind.
Oh, go ahead. We want to talk about them.
Well, I thought the birth scene was another way of like really showcasing what the Force is like. So like the connection between the mother and the children, but then the children with each other. And the part that really got me was Leia realizing, hey, these twins, they've grown together in the Force. They're so attuned to each other. And that's a really special relationship that she will never like share with them. And if she can't share with them and she has the Force, just think about like how Han gets, right?
With her and Luke. Yeah.
Well, with her and Luke, but
and
also
the kids.
And the kids,
Han
yeah.
And
the
his
kids.
Children. And I am very intrigued to see where these twins go. I mean, I know a little bit about one of them, but I don't know, like, the evolution of, like, their story arcs. But I hear that I have to read a lot.
A lot. It's like a lot.
I was putting together a list, like, a couple weeks ago, and it was quite extensive based on discussions.
I will not lie to you. The full story of the twins is... dozens and dozens of books.
I'm sure every single book is. I'm sure they're all necessary. They're all provide vital pieces of information about
book
the characters
three
of the plot.
As a plot that ties in the book 20. Yeah.
Some of them are YA.
Oh, okay. All right. Maybe there's like an essentials, like roundup of this is what you have to read.
I will say they tend not to feature heavily in the bad Star Wars books.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
That's good.
Well, yeah.
Tends not to.
Understood.
Yeah.
You're still looking at like the three major story arcs of the post Yavin battle timeline are still pretty focused on them. So.
All right. Well, there goes decades of my life.
Well,
sorry. One last thing is I really appreciated Zahn like going in depth and even writing a bit about the baby's perspective via Leia. Just like, oh, what is this brightness? Oh, well, they've been in the womb, so it's dark. And then all of a sudden, there's light, you know?
Yeah, I wasn't expecting birth trauma in my Star Wars.
Neither was I.
I'm wondering, who named the twins? Was that something Timothy Zahn was allowed to do?
I think so.
Because essentially, because it's like these two massive characters based on, or children of, two of the most important characters in the series so far. Is that an honor that was bestowed upon Zahn? And if so, why did he choose those names?
What, you don't like Jason with the C?
We need Space Jason.
These are millennial like names. Like, these go with like Brixley and what?
Well, they would have been. They would have been 1993. Well,
they would have been millennials. I'm saying they would have been millennials. Children of millennials. Yeah. That's what their names are. Yeah. I do think they're better than naming their kid Ben. When Leia,
so apparently Zahn did get to name them, and right, Jason is named after a friend of Zahn's son Corwin.
Oh, well, there you go.
You know, maybe look at his own son and was like, see.
Is Corwin named after like the Prince of Amber?
Jason, the friends was Jason with an S. The editor suggested Jason with a C
to make it more spacey.
I'm sourcing Reddit.
Yeah. It's more sci-fi.
But yeah, you're Timothy Zahn. You get to pick the baby names.
Pretty cool.
That is really cool.
It's great.
Sweet perk.
Didn't he also name Coruscant?
Did he?
I don't know.
Yeah, when we were reading Heir of the Empire, like he got to name Coruscant.
Oh yeah, wasn't
you were the one who read that annotated version.
Yeah.
It's
cool.
That's awesome.
Was it not named in the original?
No,
they
it was
never
called
it anything.
In the films.
No.
Oh.
I don't know if they've since maybe retroactively changed that in like the 90s re-releases, but
no, I don't know the original trilogy. Yeah, because the only, I mean, there's
it's only the prequel, really.
Yeah, I mean, you get a shot of it in the like celebrations and the, I think starting with the DVD release of Return of the Jedi, but no, like it's not, it's certainly not in any of the scripts.
Cool. That's great.
So how much do you wish that the sequel trilogy had been about Jason and Jaina?
Instead of,
you mean the sequel trilogy movies?
Yeah.
Yes, is the answer to that.
We're too many years past them coming out. We can't really what if anymore. It's not going to get the same clips skipped in.
What if Jason and Jaina were still canon?
Yeah. We're not getting
we
those
can
clips
have
with
our,
this.
We can have our own. I don't know. Okay, right. Like, it's Star Wars continuity is everyone has their own like Star Wars continuity, anyways. Like,
yes, I do.
So, is Empire canon? Is Empire canon because it's not a direct adaptation of Splinter of the Mind's Eye? Like how
look, some books I'm okay forgetting. It's fine.
Hey,
but they had the option. They've been bringing stuff in from the Legends books. Why couldn't they bring this bit in?
Because it's cool. Sorry.
I think though, like if I'm putting myself into like the producer, the creator, whatever, their shoes, I kind of get it because, you know, you just said there are like dozens of books about these twins,
which means a lot of material that you can adapt and pull from or pick
from. But that's also a lot of time and effort to put in, and like a lot of things to try.
Oh no.
And if you get it wrong,
effort on track,
people are going to still get mad at you. So it's.
Yeah. So it's like, might as well just start over.
Like perfect adaptations that exist still get hated on because some things are different.
Yeah, it's true. But, you know, I haven't experienced these twins any more than in this book.
True.
So I don't know if, you know, how it compares with Kylo Ren, if they did pull in anything that was worthwhile to keep. I don't know.
No.
Well, that's too bad.
I do wish that the sequels were about the twins, but I also think that the fact that it is not about the twins is not this is not the sequel trilogy's biggest issues.
Sure.
Kylo Ren is not the main. He is a. Well, yeah, that's.
Sure. I just want to be adjacent to Jaina Stan for a second.
Maybe the books were just so good, and they're like, we can't improve upon it in movie form.
You're speaking sense, Panda.
Yeah.
I'm intending to read into more Jason Jaina stuff. The extent to which that's happened is up for discussion.
Okay. One thought I did have was, a lot of Star Wars is inspired, with quotes, with Dune.
Okay.
Was the connection between Leia and the twins also inspired by Dune?
Oh.
I don't think you can say no.
Yeah.
With how much of Star Wars is just Dune, but a little bit different?
Yeah, I'm inclined to say not, like, quite, but also it's...
There's so much connect. She talks with them.
Yeah, like you can't say it not. You can't say not at all.
Yeah, there was just something that I kind of noticed. I'm like, oh,
yeah.
More Dune.
Nice.
I did. This is kind of something I noted. So going back to the clone stuff, Mara Jade implies that the Clone Wars were about attacking, like, clones attacking the Republic. Mm-hmm. So did I? If you had any thoughts on this at the time, what did any of you originally think the Clone Wars were going to be about prior to, like, the release of, like, Attack of the Clones?
I was born after Phantom Menace.
Wow.
Dang.
I think I was 99? I was 98, so...
Yeah, 99 is Phantom Menace.
Okay, I was born before Phantom Menace. I still the prequel trilogy was the first trilogy I watched for Star Wars. Okay. So. Okay.
And you don't understand why I call you a child.
It's okay. Right. I can rent cars if that makes any difference.
He's making it in the world.
I've been able to for a year.
God.
Year.
Yeah, no.
For some reason it's 25. I don't know why 25 is the age.
Yeah.
I've read this book a lot, but I really didn't remember anything that Mara said about the Clone Wars as being indicative of any kind of truth. When they started making books and films in that era, they were basically making it out of whole cloth or maybe adapting things that had at most been featured in comics.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think I could give any sort of context as to what I thought at the time either. Definitely on the reread of these, it seems clearer to me that, yeah, the intention was to have, like, not just clone soldiers, but also clone Jedi and,
yeah,
like, something that far grander than what we probably actually got.
Yeah.
The only thing I remember is going into Attack of the Clones thinking that the movie was going to be about, like, clones of Anakin, Padme, and Obi-Wan were going to attack real Anakin, or like original Anakin, Padme, Obi-Wan, etc. Which this book kind of gives us.
That is so interesting because I read this, you know, way after I've seen the prequel trilogy. So I never thought about, like, okay, for the fans who read this before those came out, what were their expectations and what were their reactions to what they ultimately got?
So, well, I think the reactions... Yeah, I think their reactions are
we're
fairly
not positive.
Yes, we're not positive, regardless of what their expectations were.
Okay, I think I now better understand the hate for the prequel trilogy.
Nobody hates Star Wars more than Star Wars fans, so.
Star Wars discourse as a thing is just unpleasant.
It has never evolved. It's just kind of as we make more.
Yes, as we're recording a podcast about Star Wars.
Oh my goodness.
I love Star Wars.
Star Wars too. Is great. I would not. Yeah,
quarter of one of my bookshelves.
Right. I would. Yeah, I could.
I just don't take it that seriously. Like, I really appreciate the world. I appreciate the characters and, like, you know, the messages, the fun. But I'm not, like, deep in the lore of Star Wars and, you know. So I guess it's just a different way to consume it.
I would like to stress this is the first Star Wars trilogy published.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they do get more detailed and in-depth. This laid a nice bedrock for the series to continue on and established a lot of things, though, as I've discussed previously, they brought a lot in from the video games as well. Later books do get significantly more what we might think of as adult fantasy novel-like.
Oh, interesting. I don't know if I'm going to like them better.
Some of them are great.
I think you'll like some of them better.
Okay. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to exploring this whole new.
You're a Malazan reader. You're not a thriller reader.
That is a lie. I am both. Okay. I was a thriller reader before I was a Malazan reader.
Well, then you evolved because that's what happens when you read Malazan, right?
You're a new Pokemon. Yeah.
Your enlightenment had arrived 2 years ago.
I just have to say, I am excited that now there is like a whole section in bookstores that I am now interested in. Because before, I would just buy Star Wars books, whatever, don't even look at them. Right? And now I'm like, okay, what is there?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Especially used bookstores have a lot.
Yes, which I have had great success in some of them.
The vast majority of my Star Wars collection is from a half-price book that was going out of sale. They gave me a bag for $20, and I went to that section, and I just piled everything in. I was just like, this is exactly where I need to be right now.
The only copy of a Star Wars book I own is the first edition, Heir to the Empire, that I found at my used bookstore. So,
oh, nice.
Impressive. Most impressive.
Good time.
I miss when they were $5.
Yeah.
Mine was pretty cheap. It was like $8.
Used bookstores.
Mm-hmm. And it probably doesn't have the if it's first edition, it wouldn't have the Legends.
No, it's the original hardcover.
Oh, hardcover.
That's cover.
It looks great. A great find for $8.
Yeah, it was
great. Yeah.
I saw that. I went, this is awesome. I brought it up to the cashier. He's like, dude, you know, I was waiting. I was waiting for my shift to end. Oh no, because you can't buy things, they have to be out. I'm like, sorry, man. Let's go. We talked Star Wars for a little bit, it was fun.
Aww.
Poor guy.
Okay, back to this book.
Yes, how do we feel about the light side versus dark side conflict in the trilogy? Because I
did it exist this was, in this book?
Yeah, not really. That I was I brought it up as because that was the one thing that I was kind of generally disappointed in, outside of that section in Dark Force Rising that we get like three scenes of. It's mostly Mara that has it, really. But
yeah,
her internal struggle. It's interesting to see like the internal struggle of light side, dark side with Mara, but at the same time,
I felt like General Iroh in Avatar. No, he's crazy and he needs to go down.
Yes. Also one of like the best quotes from anything ever. But yes.
I would agree that
the moral calculus of lethal force on Sabaoth is not hard to make.
And he, no. Luke kept crying and it's like, just give up.
Like,
there's also no like paternal connection that you have with this one.
Well, also like interesting that in that sense that it was because Zahn, it seems like, really wanted to mirror the climactic scene from Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
So he, like, Luke of course has to do like the Jedi, the try to save Sabaoth, so to speak. And yeah, but we had a whole scenes in Dark Force Rising about why this is like not like with him. This is not possible. This is pretty much not possible.
Nothing is impossible. Do or do not. There is no try.
Well, they didn't save him.
They did not. That's true.
No. Does but, make you wonder what kind of mental health system is in place for Sith or Dark Jedi who are clearly just
rubbing dirt on it.
I've also got like a bunch of clones now running around, and who's going to help them out?
Yeah.
Well, they should set up a mental support facility for that. Yes.
Who? the New Republic for Imperial clones?
That's what Luke can go do.
The clones should do it.
That's what Luke should do.
They all know each other's minds. Like
group therapy. I did enjoy the part where Mara and Luke had this interaction where, you know, Luke's contemplating the responsibility of needing to help mentor Leia's twins and talking about how, like, it's not just about training them in the Force. It's about the moral, like, the philosophies that
parenting
the roots. The parenting, true.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like amplified because they're going to be so strong in the Force, and the temptation of like giving in to all using all this power, right, is just on another level. But there was, he literally said the line of, with great power comes great responsibility, but just in a different word.
He did.
Yeah.
He has wildly varying levels of emotional intelligence where he Dark Force Rising. It takes him like way longer than it should have for him to realize what's going on with Sabaoth, but he's actually very astute.
He was
about
clouded.
Mara's
I got yelled at.
True.
He was.
He's a simple farm boy, okay.
But he is very astute about Mara's feelings towards him in this book and how she needs to work through them, which is interesting, I thought.
Yes. Maybe that was just more selective because he's more personally interested in Mara. I don't know.
Yeah. I also love training montage scenes, so I like that they got some training scenes together. Like, I'm always a sucker for like training montages.
Like last minute training.
I do have a qualm. I mean, it's a minor one, but you would think the number of times that Luke and R2-D2 have gone like to other planets to explore and stuff, like he would just have a harness ready to go to carry the
he's heavy
droid. Like, we also know R2-D2 has rocket launchers has rockets on his legs, so
didn't he have a harness when he was running through Dagobah? Because he was holding R2-D2 while training, I think.
I know, I've seen
didn't
it
didn't they
before.
Make a note a mental note like to it talk to the producer of the astromech droid that they need better carrying handles.
I'm just saying, this problem should have been solved already, okay?
Oh, yeah. Well,
I don't know. Writing a feedback report to a company is funnier to me than him having a harness.
It's an old mech, too.
That is true. He is an old
also mech. Just the idea of an astromech droid not having any sort of way to propel itself if it ever was to like get separated from its ship or anything.
It's like for hangar bay.
Yeah, it's just like these things are completely
That's in the newer models, possible. Okay.
Yeah. He's not made for a forest. He's not BB-8.
Speaking of forest, there was a whole paragraph about forests and Han's feelings about forests, which that's probably what Stormrunner would think you should cut. But I forgot
about it, so yeah.
He was like, oh yeah, as a smuggler, I never really thought about forests, but there are so many different kinds. And then there was a part about, it's now a meme where it's like, enhance. But Zahn did put in like, okay, microbinocular records can be enhanced only so much before the algorithms start breaking down.
Yep. Unless you have the Force.
True.
That's true. I may have missed this, but there was this part about Phileia, like, the Bothan being afraid of what Thrawn would find in Tantus.
We get nothing.
Okay, so that one like did not have a conclusion in this book.
Yeah. Not in this book.
I don't think so.
Okay, but do we get a conclusion later?
I forget.
Nope.
I don't think we do though.
Oh, okay.
You've read Malazan. You should know like plot. Just don't worry about it.
But this is Star Wars.
It's even so. There's even more. Don't worry about it.
No. They blew up the whole mountain. It's good.
It was. Well, I wasn't sure if it was the like hologram, like really high tech hologram thing that the Emperor had to be able to see all the campaigns and stuff. I didn't know if it was that.
I'm not sure. Speaking of holograms, I think it's when Sabaoth, I think, is talking to Pelion, maybe. And he has like, he looks like a giant hole. He's like giant when he's projecting himself from Tantus. Yeah. And I see you found the Admiral's private hologram setting.
Was, the Emperor's.
Or the Emperor's, yeah.
Oh, that's how he made himself so big.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He just no quarter size full body holo for the Emperor. No, you get his face from one angle.
I mean, is that really a setting, or is that you just move the camera closer to you?
Got to be a setting.
It's definitely a setting.
Okay, before we run out of time on this episode, the Nogri. I want to talk about the Nogri and the smugglers. So the Nogri, I did feel like they were overused a bit, like a little too powerful in terms of like the power scale, and a little too like, oh, how are we gonna get out of the situation? Don't worry, the Nogri, you know. So that part I'm just like, okay, I get fair it enough. It's a little too much though.
That's fair. Yeah, that's fine.
I think in relation to the way it has it incorporates Thrawn's death is really cool though.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, because I kind of forgot how unceremonious all of that is.
Yeah.
It's just, nope, he got the signal and kills Thrawn, almost kills Pelion and walks away.
I wrote that down as like my favorite scene in the entire book because it's kind of like this 1 minute where Thrawn goes from I am winning to OF, everything's gone, and then he dies.
Yeah. He was but like, but it was so like
artistic.
Acknowledges it.
So artistic. Yeah, it was art. But he whispered, it was so artistically done. Because the only thing he cares about is strategy. And it was a hell of a strategy that wasn't really planned. He had been just kind of doubting that these people could compare to him, and then his own hubris kills him.
Yeah.
It was cool. I really liked that scene.
Red spreading on the white uniform.
It's a good scene. Yeah, I mean, a lot of Star Wars plans are the whole everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face.
Or stabbed in the throat.
Or hit in the head by giant rocks falling from the ceiling.
Yes. I did think about, you know, because like Thrawn was very much into studying art to understand the different species psychology and, you know, how they would think in certain situations. And to me, my takeaway was like him either not spending enough time studying Nogri's art or like misinterpreting their art that led to his downfall. I mean, we saw the plants, right? The foreshadowing of like Pelion thinking like Rook, something's wrong with Rook, and like, why is Thrawn so dismissive of the Nogri? But the Dark Forest Rising, there was time spent on the art of the Nogri about how they, you know, the familial ties and how like that is so important to them. And so,
the art disappeared. Art analysis disappeared in this book.
It did a bit.
Almost entirely. Like, we got to see some of Akbar's art, but he didn't say anything about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Thrawn as a whole kind of took a step away from
very much
the focus of this book.
He was being pulled in so many directions, and we saw him drop the ball on things that turned out to be extremely important.
Yeah.
Actually, that's an interesting kind of like parallel to Card and Mara Jade. So like throughout this book, right, Card and Mara Jade have been separated. And there have been so many times where Card's like, I miss Mara Jade. Like, I need to get her back because she is autonomous. He can delegate to her and trust her. Whereas Thrawn, like, if he gave Peleon more trust and, like, weight in what his opinions were, rather than always like, oh, well, actually, no, they're not going to do that. Or, yes, they're going to do this. Like, he was a bit too dismissive of Leon.
He was too focused on setting himself up as emperor to even consider he may lose.
Yeah
it was cool. They made a very distinct characterization between Thrawn and the Emperor. They are two different people. We're not getting Emperor 2.0. We're getting this whole new character with his own motivations and character. And it was great.
Yeah,
that I did like that. Yeah, Thrawn was not just Palpatine 2.0. It was, because they're both certainly strategic. Palpatine
would have killed Mara himself,
right? Yeah, yeah. And would rely on a lot more personal manipulations and such. Whereas Thrawn. Like, Thrawn was trying to play 4D chess and, like, but I guess Palpatine does too, but it's a, like, different, like, Palpatine would usually take more of a personal, would get more personally involved if he deemed that necessary, whereas there were less instances where Thrawn would do that, and he often would, with Coruscant, oh, well, they're kind of they're off the board after he did the asteroid
trick, thing,
which they kind of were, but like it didn't, like that wasn't a,
it was decided. Visual and political mostly.
Yeah
I think you hit the nail on the head about the personal aspect. The Emperor took things very personally and Thrawn is just more objective and logical
and did not think that the Nogri would have personal reasons to betray him.
Okay, about the smugglers. So this, Jingles, you were alluding to, like, well, did they really matter? Because how it ended. What I appreciate about the smugglers was, and you also said this, like, it added more depth to the overall, like, conflict. And it's not just this New Republic versus Empire. There are casualties and collateral damage in between. There's others who's like, I don't want to fight for either side, but I will benefit as much as I can. And the way that Card is like a parallel to Han, like him, we get to see basically more of how like Han's evolution kind of went. Like in more depth than we did in the movies. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, no, the smuggler plot, I ultimately think it's kind of doesn't really matter that much, but it's certainly more of a nuanced and interesting look than the little bit we get of Han and A New Hope and like, well, Jabba's the king and Return of the Jedi, and that's kind of like that. It's just basically the Jabba's palace scene in the original trilogy is the main look into that world that we get. And it's really just there as a climax to the Han plotline that wasn't, it's not there as an exploration of how does this fit in with the struggle against the Empire, whereas this is more naturally woven into that conflict.
And it really does like expand Star Wars more beyond just the politics and the Jedi's. So
I think it's mostly not as interesting as the Jedi Sith stuff, but it's I really liked it. The drinking cup was a very cool setting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's like a cooler. Fight. Yes,
I liked the tension that was kind of built when they were. They have this meeting, and then Farrier's like, well, let's just have it on your ship. And then it's like that whole kind of sequence of events where they're meeting on Thrawn's ship and they're kind of battling each other with words. I just wish Farrier wasn't...
Planted data card?
Yeah. I just wish Farrier wasn't stupid.
Yeah.
I wish Farrier was smarter, because then it would just been a better scene. If it was more intrigue than... Card going, no, you're wrong, here's why. And then Farrier just like, well, here's my gun. What are you going to do now?
he screwed up twice with information that he shouldn't have had. And they only they called him out on it the second time.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's, and this is like their thing is like
yep.
finding loopholes in and working around very specific wordings and laws and such, so they definitely
established that Farrier just wasn't very smart from the beginning.
I just think it would have made the scene better if he was smarter.
But he's a good ship thief
because of the Wraith, basically.
That's really
he has one crew member that is his knuckle in the hole. I think on some level too, though, I think the smugglers, not necessarily Card is a key player, but all of the other smugglers, they're really the only examples of like quote unquote regular people in the universe.
Yeah.
And a lot of just, they're like, just, you know, business is their key takeaway here, and they're just trying to make a way through it. And I appreciate that you get a huge range from all of the smugglers. Like Mazik is just ready to go blow stuff up because he's mad that his business got interrupted.
Yep.
And other people are a little bit more hesitant and not sure what they're actually wanting to do. So
if we're calling them normal people, we should might as well call Rogue Squadron normal people.
I would honestly. I think
Rogue Squadron's just the black company.
Yeah.
You do get the whole like, okay, they're given, you know, like this conflict is not great. And these are just, it's an example of people who are making the best of the hand they've been dealt. And then, with the prequel trilogy, you also see like Anakin's mom, right? Like she's been dealt a really bad hand and she's making the best of what, you know, she's been given. So I think it's just, like you said, it's these examples of quote unquote more normal people.
Yeah. And, you know, like even going to like Wedge Antilles, he's such a huge name in Star Wars, it's kind of hard not to think of him in this way, but he is just kind of the guy that does the stuff. Like I think he even has one of my favorite quotes. I don't have it with me right now, but. He talks about how he had to trust a farm boy he had to trust a gambler that didn't have, and now he's got to trust a smuggler who might turn on a higher price. So
I like that. Yeah.
I did like how a recurring theme of like these minor planets was that the tourism industry has just dried up because of the increasing strife in the galaxy and entire planets have had to reshape their economy because they can't just be a tourist destination anymore.
Yes.
Yeah.
Where's that book?
It was this one.
There might be some fan fiction about more.
Oh no, our crystal city is very pretty, but not super practical when we need to update it.
It sounds like a great book.
That's some commentary being said there.
Another cool setting.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is like there's really like no limit to what you could come up with for a planet, a city to like be in the Star Wars universe.
But why do that when we can go back to Tatooine for the 50th time?
Why do that when we can just have
sand? Because everyone agrees Tatooine is terrible.
My last note is, so when they're in the throne room in Tantus, Mara was remembering red cloaked Imperial guards.
Yep. Is As we see in the movies.
Yeah.
Okay, so that is what we've seen.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sequel trilogy?
No, in the original trilogy.
They're okay. There. Yeah.
I don't remember those.
Yeah.
I should go.
They're,
these guys.
They don't do. They're mostly,
yeah, those guys.
Oh,
they
don't, yeah.
Yeah. They don't do much. Don't, yeah, they don't do anything. Yeah.
They look sick.
But they are the guard of the Emperor.
What?
Yeah. They're a version of that in the.
There's there are. The Praetorian Guard, more. Which. Okay. They're very similar. The cloaking is different.
Yeah,
they all have different style helmets.
Yeah. That's
but they are a solid red.
It's a little more practical.
Red Force designed after, yeah. Like an imitation of the original Imperial Guard.
Okay, got it. Yeah.
Because everything that the First Order does is Empire stuff tweaked a little bit.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah. We have a couple listener questions before we wrap up. So Huron Fan and Ian ask, what are the metaphors?
I'm just going to ignore them.
Good plan.
Good plan. I will give a non-cheeky answer to this a little bit. I mean, we talked about it, but first of all, this isn't Infinite Jest. So the metaphors are not very many. Though I mean the big one would be the Ursula K. Le Guin, well, not just her, but the Ursula K. Le Guin / Jungian, right, of it all, of Luke fighting himself and Mara fighting and helping excise the bad parts of Luke.
Some people are beyond saving. They tended to be clones in this book. And some people are worthy of redemption. Mara Jade.
Yeah.
And always have a support structure so your hubris doesn't end up with you dying.
Yes.
There you go.
Trust people more.
Mm-hmm. Hurt people hurt people.
That is true.
Quote.
I want that on a t-shirt, thank you.
I like that.
It's not mine.
More talent what? Card, please.
I love the narrator's voice for Card.
It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it like a Spanish accent? What is that accent?
It is kind of like Spanish with I was thinking that like Spanish, but like from a movie. I was thinking kind of like
Antonio Banderas a bit.
Yes,
I was thinking Inigo Montoya.
Oh. Okay.
Mixed maybe with Dread Pirate Roberts. It's just a fantasy Spaniard voice, I think.
Yes.
Very refined.
He's a gentleman.
He is.
Are there any more books with Card?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I've heard he's later.
That's one of the bigger plot lines that's left hanging at the end of this is how did smugglers play a role?
Yeah.
So.
Sweet.
Okay.
Including some Jason and Jaina books.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Godfather Card?
No, that's when they bring Jabba the Hutt back to life in one of the
No, it's a clone of Jabba the Hutt.
Somehow Jabba has returned.
So on
Jabba,
that
Jabba has note, like family.
Yeah, they do bring one of his like nephews back.
Yeah. So on the somehow unless somehow someone has returned note. Huron also asked, would Star Wars overall be better had The Last Command been the last Star Wars? So I asked a clarifying question as like instead of episode 9, and he said no, literally instead of literally everything that came after. So
I would say no. I really enjoyed Rogue One. But I guess that would be a prequel to all of this. And I think,
but still made after.
Yeah, it's still made after. And like Andor, The Mandalorian, like I'm okay with all of that existing. The Clone Wars animated series, like, yeah.
Darth Bane book trilogy.
Darth Bane trilogy is excellent.
Plagueis.
Yeah.
There's so much more to explore.
Yeah. Like, video games.
Yeah, I think for our mental health, yes. But I mean, then I would be into Star Trek, and I don't know if I want to be in the Star Trek.
I don't know.
Star Trek's great.
I heard that this morning that there's a Star Trek book where Loxana slaps Q in the face and like has a drag out fight with him.
Those are words.
Those are words.
I know who Q is.
I watched
Deanna Troi's mother. And she like says her catchphrases while like slapping him back and forth.
So are you saying the Star Trek books are worse than the Star Wars ones?
That doesn't sound worse to me.
I don't know what any of that means. So
I will say the handful of Star Trek books I've read are like, they are what most people complain about Star Wars being, which is like an exploitive take advantage of the fans by just writing nonsense styled thing. I think there is like some merit to what Star Wars puts out on occasion, but in Star Trek they do not care.
I think there's the books also vary in quality, like Star Wars.
Yeah.
Sure. I think there was a case in point where when I go to a used bookstore, there are way more Star Trek books on the shelves than Star Wars books.
Yeah. Because you read the Trek books and you're like, okay, I don't need to read this again.
This is
I've read exactly one, and it has Deanna Troi like sexually abusing someone for most of the book, but it's okay because she liked him.
Oh, good. Well, that's great.
Awesome.
Hey.
So what's next for us?
For Star Wars? Are we continuing?
I want to continue.
You want to continue?
I'm okay continuing.
If we want to do a standalone book that is in this time period, roughly, it takes place directly after the Battle of Endor.
Okay.
And that's The Truce at Bakura, and is the other like early Star Wars book.
Okay.
You said that one wasn't very good.
I said it was hilarious.
Is it like the zombie Star Wars book that's really bad but a lot of fun?
Red Harvest.
Yeah, Red Harvest.
That is great.
No.
The book sucks, but it's so much fun. So bad. It's so much fun.
I mean, I've never seen like such a generic zombie in my life.
It's about a race of lizard people attacking a like distant imperial colony.
This is Truce of Bakura. Like,
yeah, this is Truce of Bakura, and the New Republic responding to the call for assistance because the Emperor's dead. So they figured maybe they can convince an imperial colony that they should jump ship with the Empire and join the New Republic.
Well, I feel like I'm wasting my time reading that book or not.
Audiobook. Just got it from the library. And also, another thing I got from the library today is Splinter of the Mind's Eye.
Oh, geez. One thing I will say for Truce of Bakura, it is the first book to give Luke a love interest.
Oh,
yeah. Oh. Okay.
He's had a few. There's one that I know about. I hope it's not that one.
I will ask, if we do this book as an episode, I will ask you how many love interests in this book you think Luke has. And
Oh. All right. So I got both of those as options.
I am at some point down to do Splinter of the Mind's Eye just as a thing.
Sure.
There's also the duology that takes place directly after, right?
It's not directly. There's like a there's a bit of a time gap, but yes.
I think we need to experience some of the less refined parts of Star Wars and then get back to the refined.
I mean, what's the one with the sex scene?
Wait. Come on. People don't have sex in Star Wars.
There's one.
Like that's
there was no banging.
Pheromones.
There's no banging in this trilogy.
Babies just
this is not a bio. This is not Mass Effect.
Which ones have sex scenes, cuz there definitely are ones.
I'm not particularly looking to read those, but okay.
I do have a question for Panda, because she was kind of alluding to the Mara Luke relationship all through this read.
Yes.
Were you surprised when it didn't really
It's just beginning. Yeah. There's so much potential, you know.
There's no insta love here.
They're taking their time, you know. Mara's been scarred. She has a lot of trauma and baggage. Totally get it. Girl needs to heal. I'm still convinced that they will get together. I don't know how many books it'll take, but
how toxic will the relationship be?
Good question. I would say on average toxicity.
Average toxicity.
This can be the perfect.
I don't know.
So I just checked. Yes, there's a 10-year gap in universe between this trilogy and the Thrawn duology.
Hand of Thrawn duology. Okay. Okay.
But Thrawn is dead, so...
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Clones.
Hand of Thrawn duology.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right. What do we even find out?
I mean, Luke was born from... Luke was born from Luke's hand, so you know... Maybe they're leaving or something.
I'm going to leave that one alone.
Maybe this is a green team poll. Do we leave our fates in the hands of
trolls? No.
I think Kieran decides.
No, I think we're not doing this.
Kieran and Ian can decide what we're reading next.
I remember something that happened in this book, and maybe that is the key to the duology. Okay.
If we want a trilogy that happens a few years after this one, with the twins as toddlers, or not quite toddlers, they're like elementary school students, then we could do the Corellian Crisis, trilogy. And I think Mara Jade is in that one too.
We will come up with a plan then. Maybe Trusible Core is the start. We'll see.
I think we should do Trusible Core because it makes.
I think we should.
If you were annoyed at Luke being all wishy-washy in this one, then let's rewind a bit before he got more confidence.
And if we weren't snarky enough in this episode.
All right. Yeah. Sounds good to me.
Yeah, it has my favorite Star Wars twink.
All right, we'll I'm
on that note
curious, anyway. I'm curious to see how that gets handled.
All right, take us out.
Any last thoughts besides Star Wars twinks and Teresa Bacora?
Star Wars is awesome.
Those are the only thoughts I have. I can't wait.
This has been really fun. And thank you for letting me join in on this ride. Looking forward to more.
Nope. Thanks for coming on. Glad to have someone to pull us down from operating in Star Wars like ether fan space.
I never thought I would be a Star Wars like fangirl. I would say, like...
You consider yourself one now?
I would say I'm getting closer.
Okay.
Fair enough.
I think that is, like, a potential reality.
I would say that you've read the Thrawn trilogy, so you're
there. You've read enough. Yeah. You're
there. And I've seen all the movies.
You didn't think they were terrible, so...
You sought out extra material that is that Disney no longer considers canon, too. So
that's it's like true. An
extra level. Yeah, thanks everyone for
it's been a blast.
Yeah.
Until next time.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well then that concludes our discussion of The Last Command by Timothy Zahn and thus our discussion on the Thrawn trilogy. We will see where we end up Star Wars wise next. Until then, join us on the Legendarium Discord for more discussion. I'm Stormrunner with Kiptan, Befuddled Panda, Spook, and Jingles. And thanks to the Legendarium Podcast and to Horizon Brave for starting the Green Team. and Jingle Punks for the intro and outro music. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye. Adios.